Welcome to Let's Talk About It, co-hosted by Maria Wyatt and Scott Dudley. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.
Good morning, Imperial Valley. You're listening to your weekly wellness radio, Let's Talk About It, with your host, Maria, minus Scott today. We are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUBO 88.7 Radio Bilingue. And, of course, our phone lines are always open. Our phone number here at the station is area code 760-337-8874. Good morning, everyone. Nice weather today.
Lovely.
Lovely. Well, we'll get right to the program. Well, today we have our guest is Carlos Gonzalez. He is a program supervisor for Imperial County Behavioral Health and is the supervisor for one of the MHSA, or better known as the Mental Health Services Act program, and the TESS, which stands for?
Transitional Engagement Supportive Services.
Actually, this program has evolved.
Yes.
It's evolved, yes. And originally it was given a different name as Supportive Engagement
Network.
Network.
We had to change it because of the evolution that we went through. And it's amazing how it has developed into a good program. A better program, I would say.
Yes.
A better program. Because we have
There's
had a lot
always
of
room for improvement. It's
yes,
always weak.
Yes, but remember, I don't know if the public remembers, I was here a year ago or more. And it was just in diapers.
Mm-hmm.
In diapers. It was just like an experimental subject. And we developed into a very good program because we have been successful. We have met our quotas of population that we were aimed to serve. And the people are responding well to it all the time. All the time. The community agencies are linked to it, or we're linked to them. They know us already. They know what we're about. And they're always giving us good commendations on our program, our services.
Well, let's get to the problem. What is the transitional engagement supportive services, better known as TESS?
This program emerged because we had the population we deal with, which is a mental ill. People would lose track of patients that would come into the system, mm-hmm. And as people say, they would fall through the cracks. So,
and how would they usually enter the system?
It is through crisis, through a personal crisis, they end up in our crisis desk, through hospitalization because of another situation that is a crisis, but it's in a higher level, and when they come out of LPS program, which is conservatorship.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the only three ways that we can provide services. You cannot come from the street and say, I need your program. This is a program aimed again, to help the people that do not have any other means of support, and we provide a variety of services. And but I just again, let me just tell you, overall, what we do. What we do is we are like an emergency service after the behavioral services have been provided. We're like an emergency
aftercare.
Yes, thank you. Aftercare, and people need those services because again. The only three ways, I'll repeat it again, because a lot of people are confused with this. After hospitalization, where you're discharged from the hospital, from a mental hospital, then you can use our services. Why? Because you may need shelter, because you need support, you need applications for Social Security, Medi-Cal, daily life issues, correct?
A place to live,
you know, an apartment, mm-hmm. or if you're looking to move out of the county, you know, we help you as much as we can.
Usually the people that come to crisis, and then they end up in your program. Why are they ending up in crisis?
The majority of people, it's because of problems with the family. It's mm-hmm. mostly family support because they feel rejected, they feel lonely, they feel they don't have the support, the emotional support they need. And since the mental health of the person is not as good. Therefore, it becomes psychosis or it becomes a paranoia and they fall into crisis.
Mm-hmm.
That's when they're admitted into our system. And once they're treated, seen by the doctors, then we can enroll them in our program. And we provide a variety of services. Let me start with emergency shelter. Why emergency shelter? Because a lot of people ask us, you know, you have a lot of programs that can do that for you. But yeah, you are doing it. We are doing it because that's what we're aiming to do. We need to do that so the patient sees that we're trying to help them. It kind of bonds more with us. And the emergency shelter we provide is we pay for hotel stays up to 3 weeks, if necessary. Okay. Because a lot of people, when they come into crisis or the family abandons them practically, they're alone.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't have a place to go back. They don't have support. They don't have, meals, nothing. So we provide meals. We give them shelter for up to 3 weeks in a local motel. And we also provide breakfast, lunch, and dinner through the crisis desk.
Okay.
So the only thing we ask is that they comply with that and they come and pick up their meals themselves because we give them a little responsibility. We just don't enable the patient, right? So that's one of the good things we have other than permanent housing because people sometimes want to leave the county. They're fed up with the county, so they don't want to be here. So they're only looking for a temporary shelter.
Or sometimes they're just here passing by.
That's a good subject. That's a good subject because, incredibly, a lot of people have been just driving through Interstate 8, and guess what happens? They have a crisis. They go through a crisis while driving. It's almost incredible because we have had a couple of people that have done that, and mainly from Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And it's another county, it's another, system, but we do provide services as we're deemed to. And a lot of people do not believe this because it's like incredible. You're just driving through.
Yeah.
You're just driving through and it happens and where do I go? Where do I go? Who's going to take care of me?
So you've had several?
Yes. Actually, about five people already through the year. Through this fiscal year, we have like five cases already.
Wow.
And incredibly, most of them are from Phoenix, Arizona, or from one person from Texas and four from Arizona.
Wow.
Mostly Phoenix. Anyway, but that's another service we provide. Emergency clothing. Why emergency clothing? Because, we have agencies understand our process because they also go through that, right? But why emergency clothing? Because people do not understand that when a mentally ill patient loses or falls into crisis, they get rid of things. They don't think properly.
Well, they're not. I mean, the first thing is when you're in a crisis, you're not really thinking about, taking care of yourself.
Precisely. So a lot of people even get rid of their things, just see somebody, here, take this. It's like an impulse. And so what happens, they lose all their personal belongings, and mostly it's clothing and personal items like radios and DVDs, all that stuff. So we provide emergency clothing through the local, Salvation Army is very good with us, or to us, and they allow us to pick more than what we need to. Because sometimes they have, two, three garments that you can pick up. But with the Salvation Army allows us to pick up to six or seven garments at the same time. It's just to provide a weekly, at least you
have
seven.
Thank you, Salvation Army.
Yes.
And let's remember that we have to always also donate to the Salvation Army.
True. Please, it's a good cause. I do recommend that you donate. Okay, the other thing is the emergency food baskets. Because a person coming out of a crisis situation or hospitalization or abandoning the LPS process, which is conservatorship, sometimes they do not, like I said before, they do not own things any longer.
Mm-hmm.
So they do need a food as well. And in the process of applying either for food stamps or any other
aid,
we provide them with emergency food baskets from the food bank. Food bank is also really good to us.
And they always need donations, too.
And they're always there. They're always there for us. Okay, so thank you, food bank. Another thing we do is the SSI, SSA benefits application or appeal, because sometimes the
And that could be very lengthy and
very
complicated
much,
and
very much.
Very confusing.
But you know what, Maria? Thankfully, they know who we are, so they're trying. They're not trying to speed up the process, but they dedicate the best time to make it faster because they understand that our patients are in desperate need of getting services, so they do kind of help us a little bit more, okay? And the appeals are also another thing because sometimes a patient is denied services because X or Y reason, And then they go into crisis themselves because they feel abandoned. They feel the system is not helping them. You know, everything is catastrophizing. So it becomes an issue that I can't do this. I can do that. Will you help me? Of course we will help you. We will.
But they have to. I mean, it takes a while.
Yes, it does.
It takes a while,
the
whole process of the getting SSI or benefits.
Yes, but luckily the system has gotten better with us, and not only with the tests, but with the LPS program mm-hmm. as well, which is another, not component, but co-component, mm-hmm. I would say, of our system, because through them, you know, when they finish LPS conservatorship, then they're on their own again. And if they don't have family support, if they don't have anything else, who are they going to mm-hmm. go to? So that's when we come in. And we provide all the services that I've just been mentioning one by one. The other thing is food stamp application. We try to speed it up as much as possible. And again, we have a guardian angel because we always get things faster
wow.
for some reason.
Who is the person? Next.
Can't say. But the Section 8 housing application is also included in our program. And as a matter
of fact,
and
that, again, it's not something, unless you have a magic wand, because, you know, we have a lot of people out there that are on the Section 8 list.
Yes.
And they've been there for a couple of years, sometimes a year, 2 years.
But you know what? Through the process of elimination, a lot of those people have moved out yes. of the county, so they're leaving vacancies mm-hmm. available. Incredibly, we got a memo yesterday, I think, or Monday, telling us that the process was being lighter now. That we have more spaces available
wow.
for people that apply for a long house term.
Okay.
So, but it's really working good. Another thing we do have, thanks to your program, we do the drug and alcohol
one
program
of the
referral. One of the programs, the drug and alcohol referral as well, and the other programs that you have, the TOS and the WAS, have helped us a lot. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. It's really.
But those are for kids. How, I mean, going back a little bit for the TOS program, is this also for kids?
No. It has to be 18 or older. But you know, remember, some of those kids have kids as well,
mm-hmm.
and that's when we come in and do child services. And
well, maybe that's one thing for evolving the test, providing
yeah.
for minors.
For now, it remains 18 and above. But
the reason why, I mean, we just had a recent suicide in Imperial, and
yes.
It was also a minor, and then another suicide here in El Centro for an adult. So, you know, those are, unfortunately, it's things that happen, you know, they shouldn't happen, but it
Correct.
Did. And, you know, maybe with people knowing more about the services, more about the crisis desk that mm-hmm. we have at Imperial County Behavioral Health, and then the test program, just, you know, if there's any, sometimes they don't show any signs, and but them themselves, if they feel depressed, there's a sure helpline also.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
We have several resources here in the county.
Yeah, well, we have been using them.
But maybe that's one for next year, doing our, because every year we have to do a plan.
Yeah.
Submitting one for maybe minors, because minors do end up in crisis.
Yes. Yeah, and people
through the whole adolescent years is tough, being in high school and the bullying and
mm-hmm.
and I think that's one of the from what I hear, why, you know, the suicide happened, a lot of bullying that happened.
Yes, we have had cases where the I can call them youngsters, they're 24 years old, they have a 5 or 6 year old kid.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the support is not there. The mother is not.
We have We have our teenage pregnancy rate is very high here in the county, very high. So there's a lot of young kids having kids at 16, 15, 14,
wow.
17. So
that's when we come in on test too, because we have to look for. It's secondary to us because we have to refer, you know, the kid to children's services, mm-hmm. correct? And that's one of the things that we also do. We have open communication with your program, your programs, and even incredibly older people. Older people, the abuse is immense in this county, and we're just, I think we're covering our eyes. We don't want to see that. Because it's my abuelito, my abuelita, you know. And
there's also elder abuse. Yeah, there's also elder abuse, too.
And
there's a lot of
Yes. And this is one of the reasons that we provide emergency shelter, because sometimes we have to take them away from their own families.
Mm-hmm.
And this really hurts a lot because, you know, it's incredible how it happens. And they're left alone with no food, no shelter, no money, nothing.
But going back to the substance abuse treatment, there's been a decrease in services. It's only for people who are from coming out of the test program,
yes.
The duly diagnosed,
yes,
and women. But for just people that just have a substance abuse and they're males,
mm-hmm.
There's no.
That's right. That's right. That is right. But it works out, and even we ask them, you know, we provide the transportation services, mm-hmm. as well. So if there's no excuse not to attend the program. See, we try to enforce that as much as we can, and we do referrals to a lot of programs. Okay, another thing we have available is finding a doctor or a dentist, because they're very scared of people. People come in a crisis situation. They're sometimes still a little paranoid about "quote unquote" normal, regular people. So they're afraid, and this is the word I can use loosely, afraid, because they don't remember how to pick up a phone and call and say, "I need an appointment. Will you please?" So what we do is we enable them to ask to call themselves.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing we do. Even from our own offices, we encourage them. Us sitting next to them. We're there. We're providing the services, and please call. You can do it. And unbelievable, it happens.
Mm-hmm.
It happens because they feel backed up.
But this is all voluntary services. Right?
Yes, yes. That you said the key word. We cannot force them to do what they don't want to do. That's one of the things. If they tell us flatly, "No, I don't want your services," we have to let them go.
Mm-hmm.
We have to let them go. Another thing is the referral to MHSA programs, and the driver license and ID application. That's another one.
You can't get anything if you don't have an ID.
Exactly. Yes, good point.
I went through that. I lost my driver's license for about a week, and I was like, okay, you know, I can't even use my credit cards because,
yes.
Can I see your ID? I don't have one.
Mm-hmm. Even if you have a picture of it, they still question it.
Because
It happened with one of our clients with Bank of America. It had their picture. But they would not accept it.
Yeah.
They would not accept it. Anyway, but it's still, we're going back to the paranoia issue, but because they're not used any longer to be your own people.
Mm-hmm.
So we take them personally.
And probably some of them have never had a driver's license or an ID card.
Well, it's like I dare to say half and half, because mm-hmm. a lot of them used to drive before, and a lot of them wouldn't. They would use the public transportation. But still, as you mentioned, the ID is very, very crucial, because if they want services, they need an ID. And it's a major action, a major situation for them when they cannot or will not talk to a clerk that is behind a desk because they feel intimidated. So what we do, again, we don't take them by the hand. We go with them.
Mm-hmm.
We go with them. We allow them to make their own agreements, their own questions. And if they start, like, hesitating, and we just pat them in the back and say, "Come on, you can do it." And then it happens. It happens. It's just, it's amazing how people respond to a little pat in the back when you're alone, when you're lonely, mm-hmm. kind of. And that's how we help them to get the ID. Juvenile court matters. Some people that we have in crisis or come out of the programs have family. And that family sometimes have problems with the court, juvenile court.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another issue that it's on their mind. You know, what's going to happen to my kid? Who's going to take care of this? So that's when we come in. We talk to the persons we need to talk, of course, with a release of information, affidavit. And It works well because now they feel secure, they feel confident that the kid is going to also be responsible for his own actions. So they don't worry about it anymore when we tell them.
Yeah.
We talk to the juvenile court system, we found out when the appointment is, we're going to take your kid if we need to, or we're going to refer the kid to another program. And it's like a relief for them, because I've seen those faces, you know, mm-hmm. just relax, calm. And we also help with immigration paperwork. It's just the paperwork. A lot of people are confused that we're trying to immigrate people into the United States. No.
So what you're trying to saying is that sometimes you end up with people who are undocumented in the crisis.
Yes, but that's an issue we don't touch.
We're not immigration officers.
Exactly. And the immigration paperwork is something that, again, it's pages and pages and pages. Or sometimes they have pending issues with immigration, like deportation or stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But that's not our concern. Mm-hmm. We just address the mental issue side, and we work
and provide assistance.
Yeah, we work as much as CRLA has been very good with us as well, providing counseling. And we haven't had any major problems. Just problems that the immigration doesn't know where the patient is. Mm-hmm. They can locate them. And so a warrant issue is done and all that stuff. So sometimes we're able to stop the warrant issues because of the immigration, because of our services. So it's been working very, very good. The other thing is parole and probation. Sometimes, and our clients have done things that they're not supposed to, and of course they fall into parole or probation situations. Therefore, what we do is we talk to the probation officers, we explain the situation, but luckily they know we exist, they know we're there, and they know that we mean well, and we're trying to help the patient to go through this situations without any consequences. And luckily, it has happened because probation officers and us, we have direct contact with them. We have cell phones. We have everything on them. So we can call immediately and say, this person is here. No, don't worry about it. We're taking care of it. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. So it's really good how the community has accepted and the social services have accepted our services. Because we're like an extra hand. We're like an extra hand. And that's what I feel very proud of because...
Just before, when there was no test program, you know, they would get out of crisis and, okay.
What next?
Okay, you're free to go.
Yeah, exactly.
They call the relative, okay, so-and-so is ready to be picked up.
Uh-huh. Or sometimes the relative would be like miles and miles away.
What do I do? And I go, and as family members, and... What do you do?
Yes.
What do you do?
Yes.
What am I supposed to do now that, you know, my loved one is, mm-hmm. is ready to be picked up? What's going to happen once I take him home? I don't want him to be home because I have small children or I have other people that, you know, I'm afraid that, you know, they'll go through a crisis again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But, and you said something very crucial, I don't want.
Mm-hmm.
But what does a client want?
Yeah.
See, that's another issue. But
it's based, you know, and this is part of the program here at Behavioral Health is the stigma of mm-hmm. mental illness
mm-hmm.
and, you know, to provide information to the public.
Yes, by all means. And
I think that's when you don't have information, that's when people get scared and afraid and
that's where we're there. We're kind of in the shadows sometimes, mm-hmm. you know, but it doesn't bother us. Eduardo, I have an excellent case manager.
What's his name?
Eduardo Duran. And I hope you're listening, Eduardito. No, he's earned his wings because he's excellent with our people. He just goes straight to the point, nitty-gritty. And people like him. People like him because he's not an enabler. He's an abler. He assists people. He gets into the family very, very much deep into the family. So he knows what's going on more or less. He has good rapport with the doctors that we have, the psychologists, and also he has good rapport with all the communities in the vicinity. So they just hear another Duran, and it's like, okay, we know what we need to do. And I think that's awesome. That's awesome because at the beginning, who? You know, who are you? Where from? You know, what do you do? So it was a lot of questioning, a lot of, speculation about us. But now we have settled and we're evolving. And we even raised our numbers because we were aiming at a yearly average of 120. Now we're up to 150.
Oh, wow.
So it's growing. We average between 10 and 15 clients a month. You may say, okay, it's a small number. Yes, it's a small number, but it requires excessive amounts of time. It's time-consuming because it's not one simple thing. It's one thing after another. You have to look for shelter, for food, for family, all that stuff. So that's what we're there to do. And we do it gladly because people are really thankful to us. There are some that, because of the trauma they went through, crisis or LPS or hospitalization, that they don't want our services. But it's understanding.
I would like, I mean, I would, if I had a relative that went through a crisis, I would be very grateful for the services. I mean.
Well, thank you.
Today we're talking to Carlos Gonzalez. He is the program supervisor for the TESS program for the Transitional Engagement Supportive Services. And we'll take a short break, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Let's Talk About It, presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services, each Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. on KUBO 88.7 FM Radio Bilingüe.
And welcome back. You're still listening to your weekly wellness radio, Let's Talk About It, with your host, Maria. Mine is Scott. We are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUBO 88.7 Radio Bilingüe. And if you missed the first half of this show, you can always access it through our podcast at kxoradio.com. And, of course, our phone number is always available. Our phone line is open at 760-337-8874. And before we start with Carlos and talking about the TESS program, I just want to give a really quick community info. And it's Save the Date for Saturday, April the 2nd. It is it's Walk to End Alzheimer's, and it's sponsored by the Alzheimer's Association of Imperial Valley office. And it's a 2-mile walk at Imperial Valley Mall. Registration begins at April the 2nd at 7 a.m., and the walk starts at 8 a.m. There's no registration fee, but if you raise $50, you receive a walk T-shirt, and the proceeds benefit the programs and operations of the Alzheimer's Association of Imperial Valley. And the 2011 title sponsor is Sun Community Federal Credit Union. So, again, if you need more information, you can contact Frank Espinosa at 760-335-3725 or by email at frank.espinosa@sanalz.org. And it's Walk to End Alzheimer's. And this is a very good fundraiser to raise awareness and to also to, with your help, increase the awareness of Alzheimer's and increase the funds to enhance Alzheimer's care and support. And most important, it's to advance the critical research to end Alzheimer's. And it's a very devastating disease. You know, my dad's getting up there, and you know, that's something that Alzheimer's, you don't, that's very heartbreaking for the families. You know, one day you go and you want to, you see your dad, and your dad doesn't even recognize you. And, I mean, just a relative or your family member just won't recognize you. So, you know, this is very important. Again, this is April the 2nd on Saturday at the Imperial Valley Mall, and it's a 2-mile walk. Again, the registration starts at 7 a.m., and the walk starts at 8. And it's, if you raise, there's no registration fee, but if you raise $50, and you receive a walk T-shirt. And, again, this is for a good cause. So, again, the walk, walk to end Alzheimer's. We're back here with Carlos Gonzalez. He is the program supervisor for the Transitional Engagement Supportive Services, better known as the TESS program.
Yes, thank you very much. Let me just summarize a little bit. The program was created to address the specific needs of each person at the time their personal crisis occurred. Once this occurs, the MHRT or the case manager is immediately hands-on with the client. So we are very fast. We're there when we need to be. And immediately, crisis desk is linked to us, because before the client leaves the crisis, he's given a little pamphlet, mm-hmm. our pamphlet. Either if he wants the services or not, he still gets a pamphlet. Mm-hmm. It's just for, you know, for future use. Not probably, but maybe.
Do you also involve the family if the client or the person wants them?
It depends, Maria, because some of our clients are very much well involved with the families. Others don't care about mm-hmm. them. They abandon them.
Or they're here. They're not from here, like you mentioned
that's
before.
That's another one. They're not from here, and it has happened. Precisely yesterday, we had somebody in crisis whose only family member was in San Francisco.
Wow.
And we called the brother, and the brother, this was amazing, because the brother and I were just stunned of how he told us very, very assertively, I'll be there at 2:30. And he was in San Francisco. So he took an early flight, and he was here 10 minutes before what he had told us he
wow.
would be here. It was just amazing, because I thought, you know, I shared this with all of my peers, because this is amazing, you know, how some families respond to a family member need.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very supportive for the patient. Very supportive, because he knows that people care.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
happily,
that's very important. I mean, that's part of, you know, if you have a supportive family member and supportive environment,
mm-hmm.
you know, that
mm-hmm.
helps with your recovery.
As well as nurturing.
Nurturing.
Because this brother is somebody who had been through his illness mm-hmm. with his brother, but the brother kind of wandered away a mm-hmm. little bit. He wanted to take a job in San Diego, and then he got involved in the Imperial Valley somehow with somebody, some agencies that may offer him employment. So he wanted to look good and do things on his own. He continued taking his medication, but he came down here. So when he came down here, the environment is very, very different than San
yeah.
Francisco. So it caused him to fall into crisis. He ended up at our desk, and it was, I would dare to say, a mild crisis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes I didn't think they were mild and or bad crisis.
Mm-hmm.
They're all crises anyway,
mm-hmm.
right? But he was in good shape, and he the brother understood what he was doing, and they had a talk with Eduardo. Eduardo was kind of the mediator, and they settled perfectly, and he took him back to San Francisco.
Good.
So it was we closed the chart, we closed everything with a happy ending,
mm-hmm.
which is expected of most of our cases. But there are others that are really, you know, it causes a lot of pain to
mm-hmm.
see and hear that the family does not want the member. And it's like, okay, then we need to tell the member.
Well, it's like I said, it could be because of lack of information on a mental illness.
Or, you know, I don't want to say this, but it's just also not caring.
Mm-hmm.
Not caring. They reach the point where they don't want to put any effort into it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They're just giving up on the family member.
Mm-hmm.
And it's incredible to hear those words, but I have heard them on the phone. You know,
mm-hmm.
no, I don't want to do anything to do with my brother.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, thankful we have the test program. And Eduardo, again, is good. He's a good MHRT. He follows the CBT
mm-hmm.
process. And he's he has a high successful rate. Very, very few cases have not responded, but it's because of other issues, not because
mm-hmm.
of CBT. But anyway, it's been a good year, and we're going forward with this. And again, we're more linked to crisis than before, because now, like I said, the pamphlet is given, you need it or not. So there's no excuse that you don't know about the test program. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now
again, voluntary.
Yes, yes, voluntary. The only as a client, some or most of them have responsibilities towards us as well. And what we ask them is to give an honest and complete information at the time of the assessment plan.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, if you're immediately being discharged from crisis, hospitalization, or conservatorship, as well as your medical and basic needs need to be met. So how are we going to know what you need if you don't tell us, if you run away? Like, a lot of people have done that too. Okay, but it has consequences
yeah.
later, because we get them back somehow. Anyway.
somehow is like
it's one way or the other. Okay, and we have to remember that when a person experiences a crisis that affects their mental health, is it because they may be missing important necessities of life? This is like you said, the family member comes in and gives the support, gives the nurturing, gives all the items necessary to survive for
mm-hmm.
the person. And some of our patients have half of that, but it's still good. It's still good because the attachment to the family is immediate. We also have not kids, but we have 18, 19-year-olds that are very, very disoriented. You know, they chose to do drugs. They chose to
mm-hmm.
do blah, blah, blah. And we have to...
But sometimes they use drugs to cope with their mental illness.
Correct. Yeah, that's the easy way out. But it's there. It's there. And it's difficult to rationalize with them many times because, you know, the youngster is always like, okay, I can do it on my own. You know, I don't need you. I don't. And again, based on the voluntary basis that you mentioned, we have to let them go.
Mm-hmm.
And when we see that they have potential to succeed, we still have to let them grow. It's hard sometimes. It's really hard. But we have to do it because that's what we do.
Mm-hmm.
The other issue we have that is very important is confidentiality, because a lot of the families, you know, were still the old way, conservative. They don't want the neighbor to know. They don't want other family members to know. So confidentiality is extremely high, and we cannot provide any information outside the department, and only with a written consent from the client we can release those that information. Only under those circumstances, records have to.
So, if let's say the spouse brings their husband or wife, and they can't, you can't speak to them.
We cannot even acknowledge, you know, that they've been, you know, through our program, and people do it. People come in, and I'm the wife, I'm the husband, I'm the brother. I have the right. Yes, sir, you have the right, but these people are older, you know, mature, over 21. Mm-hmm. And they can
over
make
18.
Their own decisions. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Over 18. Over 18. They can make their own decisions, and you're not on the list. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
They get upset. They get angry, but they process it. Another thing we have that is good is the language assistance. Where most of us are bilingual in Spanish and English, but if there's any other language, we have the TTY system, or the American Sign Language, or the hearing impaired. Those services are available from 8 to 5 upstairs from
mm-hmm.
us. So we have immediate access to any other language that we need to use. Luckily. And we also have the patient's right advocate, which is Hilda Dame, in case the client feels...
His rights were violated or...
Yeah. Which happens sometimes, you know, because of the speediness of our program. They feel overwhelmed and they think we're pressuring them, and, you know, anything can become an issue. But they do have, we provide the phone number on our little booklet that we have, and we have all the numbers also written up for interpretative services. Okay? So we're a very complete program, and we're trying hard to, like you said, maybe I will speak to the higher-ups and ask them, you know, why can't we do it with the younger generation as well? Because that way we have complete access and then referrals to your programs too.
Mm-hmm.
We can work together and link.
There's a lot of families that are in need. You know, their son or daughter are going through a crisis, and then it could be because the family is going through a stressful situation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's the whole family, you know, either they're mm-hmm. homeless or losing their home, you know, just or there's maybe domestic violence, or just there's so many things that can.
Yes, unfortunately, but see the we find out when the kids fall in crisis, and that's the only way we can find out, because see the prevention programs work, but again the family has to be accessible to the information, and I've seen a lot of people that see our booklets and pamphlets and they just throw them away. I've seen them in Calexico.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to mention places, but I've seen it in Calexico that people are giving pamphlets from our programs and they throw them away.
Several programs that we have is that, you know, just going and talking to the people, trying to tell them about our program, they wouldn't listen to us, or they wouldn't listen to the mental health rehab tech. But now that we have peer supporters, you know, their own age, people their own age and similar backgrounds, they listen to them.
Wow.
So we have to find other ways in using, you know, maybe one of our motivational interviewing, or just being, build an alliance, build a
mm-hmm.
relationship with them, and
mm-hmm.
and being able to, then that way they become more, okay, hey, let me try the program.
Yeah.
Because it's all voluntary.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. But the thing is, what you're saying is that at an early age, everything is caught and it's noticed, and the way it's going, and sometimes it's a family issue. The kid is affected as well as the father,
mm-hmm.
which we have two cases on that situation. The father is away in an institution, and the kid was just released to his mother. Mm-hmm. And see how it works. Mm-hmm. So far, he's done okay, but he's very angry at his father because he sees his father as a main source of the inheritance mm-hmm. of the genes, and so he blames his father constantly. Mm-hmm. And we tried therapy, we tried a lot of things with him, and he's just fixated with that idea that his father is guilty, so that's why he hates his father. Mm-hmm. And the word hate is the one that we've been working most because mother is really worrying about that because she's afraid he's gonna kill his father one day. Mm. See that.
But that's why. You know what, and that when you do that, you refer to other programs.
Yes,
correct.
Yes, yes. We don't get involved as too much. We just touch like the tip of the iceberg and see how it is, and we try to put our grain of salt. And if that doesn't work immediately, a lot of knows what to do. Mm-hmm. And Eduardo, I have to give him kudos because he is about to finish his master's mm-hmm. in psychology, and he's really good, and he's very analytical. Mm-hmm. That's one thing that I like about him. I like many things about him, but that's one of them, because he analyzes a situation in a way that the patient is always benefited. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not, I want to look good. I need to do this, I need to do that. And he's done excellent rapport with San Diego hospitals and institutions. As well as moi, myself. I've spoken with a lot of the institutions, and believe me, Imperial Valley clients are well accepted in institutions that we need to use.
And that's one of the things that you have to work very closely, because we don't have an inpatient mm-hmm. a hospital here.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to be taken all the way to San Diego.
Yeah, yeah. And again, I have to congratulate them. They're not listening to us, but... it's really worth knowing that San Diego is very, very cooperative with us. The hospitals, the facilities.
The coordination that has to happen, the transportation.
Yes, yes. The transportation department is another one that is working with us.
Mr. Alberto Fajardo.
Yes, Mr. Fajardo is excellent supervisor too. Mr. Pacheco, and everybody that works with him, all the transportation team always help us. Because, you know, sometimes we have clients that require two people to drive with them,
yeah.
Because they may become aggressive, they're all prepared for an emergency, and they always travel in pairs, and they always kind of read what's about, so they know before time what can expect from
the client. Eduardo Duran,
yeah.
does your MERT go also to San Diego when they're being released?
No. What we do is, let's say we have a patient from crisis, goes into TAS, the client wants to continue the services, so then we refer them to teams.
Okay.
The teams are the ones that take care of the transportation, medical.
But when they're being released from the hospital, on the way
from
back
the hospital,
over here.
Yes. Good point. Thank you for mentioning that. The way we handle it is, first is the family. The family, we need to find out if the family is able to provide transportation for the client, right? If not, for X, Y reasons, you know, then we go to option two, which is the Greyhound bus.
Mm-hmm.
But the doctor has to certify that they're capable of riding the bus.
We don't want them to go somewhere else.
Exactly.
Get lost.
If they want to go to Yuma, they should not end up in Sacramento.
Yeah.
Okay. And the third one is our own transportation system, which is having nullify the other two, then we provide the transportation, which is most of the case, mm-hmm. most of the time. Because some clients, you know, are very hazy, are still very heavily sedated and because of the treatments. So we need to go pick them up and bring them home. But we do provide those services as well.
And if they don't have a home?
If they don't have a home, we harbor them for up to 3 weeks in a local place. And then Eduardo moves, finding housing for him or her, either temporary or permanent.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on what they want to do. But honestly, we have had a successful rate with our mm-hmm. program. We are keeping numbers just because of the MHSC report that we have to do. And our main concern is just that successful stories every time.
Mm-hmm.
It's not impossible. We're doing it. And what's more, we do have a history. You know, before, like you said, people were discharged from crisis. Goodbye, good luck. And then they would fall again into the crisis situation.
Like a revolving door.
What happened with you? Where's the history? Where's this? Now we have a history. We have addresses. We have phone numbers, we have family contacts, so we're, it's working very, it's all well integrated. Mm-hmm. So what, if it happens again, we have a history on the person, which makes it easier for a lot of us, including the doctors, because we know the medications that we're taking, all the history. But the main thing about the test room is that, that we're there. We're there. And the people cannot get lost any longer. Yeah, it's just
can you keep them like a certain amount of time when they come into the test program?
Just let's say
it's, I know it's limited, but what is the time limit? Or
the time limit is 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. 3 weeks, because luckily we have done the work in less sometimes than a week. Mm-hmm. Actually, 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
Because we move fast, and that's the we can provide quality because it's not that many clients that we have.
Mm-hmm.
So Eduardo can spend even the whole day with one client. The program allows
nice.
The program, yes, exactly. The program allows that. That's why he moves fast. And by the end of the day, we have the client placed with food, with a place to stay, and clothing.
Mm-hmm.
So your three basic needs are mm-hmm. covered. And, you know, John, our manager, you know, he's always supportive. He's always giving us input, you know, new agencies, new things that are going on, rules, regulations, all that stuff. So I know Mr. Graz is doing something right now. He's not with us, but he's a good manager too, like you. Yeah, we have to be kudos to our higher ups as well sometimes.
Okay, so for more information?
For more information is 482-4011. Lovely Christina. We'll answer the phone.
And again, the three situations where you can... going to the test program?
Hospital, out of hospitalization, out of a crisis desk, and out of the LPS program, conservatorship. That's a program that you can be in it for up to a year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's how you manage your situation, the hospitalizations. If you're institutionalized, then we monitor the program, the progress every week. Because it's a good system we have, because we have the legal, we have the... and now running into conservatorship. I just give a little bit of explanation because people don't know what LPS stands for. Lieberman Patrick, I always forget the S. Lieberman Patrick something. No. It's a kind of act that occurred. So they call it LPS conservatorship. Anyway, it's no more than a year. No more than a year. And you're monitored all the time. If you're institutionalized, then I transfer the case to case management. And case management follow-ups with them with actual visits. They go visit the client, they talk to him or her, and it's evaluated through periods of 3 months, every 3 months. The client can contest, you know, his situation, but it needs to be proven by doctors as well and backed up by doctors.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just, oh, I feel well, I want to go home.
No, sorry.
We can't do that. We need to evaluate you.
But when the doctor says that's okay, then they can go into you.
Yes, but remember, since it's a legal situation, a judge has to approve it
mm-hmm.
as well. So for all legal due process, we have to go to court
okay.
all the time. Okay. So the LPS program is a good program, too. A lot of people think it's negative because they take their loved ones away. But it's for their own benefit. And it works.
It works.
It works. It works well.
Okay. Again, the phone number?
482-4011.
Well, thank you, Carlos. Thank you so much for being on the show. And
thank you for bringing
us an update. Giving us an update on the test program. It has evolved, and it's
yes.
there's still room
yes.
for evolvement. I'm still encouraging,
always.
You know, to lowering the age from 18 mm-hmm. to maybe
16, 15, 14. Mm-hmm. Hopefully.
We'll have to talk to the management over there.
Well, you can bring it up to the management yes. meeting.
But thank you so much, and again, thank you for listening. And again, if you missed the program, you can always access it again through our podcast on kxoradio.com. And have a good weekend and happy Patty's Day today.
Oh, that's right.
I need to go get something green for me. I overhear Mr. Mario is wearing
green.
even his iPhone is green. but have a good weekend and I hope to hear from you guys next week. Bye bye.
Be good, everybody. Bye bye.
You've been listening to Let's Talk About It, heard each Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. on KUBO 88.7 FM, Radio Bilingue. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.